From the 1959 album, recorded live, Cannonball Adderley Quintet in San Francisco. It was recorded live at the Jazz Workshop, breaking new ground for music being recorded in a natural setting, including with all the background noise of the patrons to directly register their audience reaction. It's called Dish Air. That's how Cannonball Adderley said it's supposed to be pronounced. The title of this tune is listed as This Here. But he was careful in presenting this song, this tune, to the audience to let him know that he called it Dish Air. Cannonball Adderley on alto sax, Brother Nat on cornet, Bobby Timmons on piano, and Lewis Hayes on drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we are talking out loud today, continuing the discussion. We're in a very perilous time, and the immediate future looks very daunting, and this is the time of reckoning. We really ought to be thinking about putting things straight, both for ourselves, for our larger community in which we live and operate, but also nationally and even internationally. What is our place in advancing the good that we can do? And what is our role in confronting the evil that assails us? This is the work we have to do. It's brave work. It requires a certain amount of spine. We're going to have to come to terms with the reality that we're living in and with. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. And let's get your thoughts. I don't just want to, you know, let's not do the idealistic thing and say, well, yeah, this is what ought to be done. Let's be realistic about our options. What do you think can work? What's the downside? What are we actually facing as individuals, a community, with regard to systems that control, systems and forces that control us all? So there we go. 888-874-4888. We start with Jay from New York. You're on the air.
How are you, Eutrice? How are you doing?
Fine, thanks. But you need to get off the speakerphone. It always reverbs.
Okay, sorry. Sorry about that. You know, basically, what we're going to have to do, Eutrice, is to prepare ourselves for the worst in regards to the direction that this country is going to go in, regardless if Trump or Hillary gets in. I think things will be far worse if Hillary gets in, just based on some of my observations, which are
all right. Well, tell me, what specifically do you think will be worse?
What will be worse is, number one, no business in the United States will be able to get done because of, number one, the hatred of the Republican Party of Eutrice Lee. So when she looks to put forward any type of proposal, they will filibust it. When she looks to put forward Supreme Court justices, they will filibust it. I think even Ted Cruz yesterday or the day before said that that's what will happen. Now, the flip side to that may be the destruction of the Republican Party if they do that, because 2 years from now, maybe people will have just gotten so fed up because of what it would cause in regards to the challenges that the country will have economically and everything based on not being able to create jobs in the wars that Hillary will get us in, that in 2018, the Democrats may be able to take over the House and the Senate, which would absolutely destroy the Republican Party forever. Because at that time, I think Hillary Clinton may be able to do something if she has control, because I think she's more gangster and more of a fighter than Barack Obama was when he had control of the House and the Senate. Now, the positive thing,
but she will be very busy defending herself against indictment.
If
she were to get elected. Let me ask you, you're framing your discussion within the two-party system and within the system as it exists. What are your thoughts about independent political movements, and to what degree do you see them emerging as some kind of a force in ameliorating these desperate things that you are predicting will happen?
It can't emerge in this country because of the racial divide. It'll never be able to happen because, unfortunately, people won't come together and do what's in their best interest and really, really incorporate people of color into it. And this is what honestly happened with Bernie Sanders' situation. Because, you know, I'm going to say this to you, and you may agree and you may disagree. The Bernie Sanders reason for him not being stronger than what he was is because he never embraced black people and people of color. And that's the honest to God's truth. If he would have done just simple things in regards from the beginning, went on black talk radio, went into black media, did certain outreach to African Americans and all of this in regards to the churches and things of that nature, even also dealt with Hispanics, Dominicans, and other minority communities, he would have gotten, I would say, maybe 20 to 30% more of voter participation in regards to his campaign. But he never embraced it. And that's the honest to truth problem with third parties in this country. It will never happen because of the racial divide. And the thing is, we as a people of color will never come together and do our thing because we want to be incorporated and embraced by white people. And that's the sad thing, because if we as people of color collectively in this country came together and we left out the so-called progressive whites and we took care of our business and we said to the progressive whites, you organize, you get yourself together and you deal with your white supremacy and your racist behaviors. And then once you got that together and we got our thing together, then we could come together and join forces to move this country ahead. But I say to you this, Eutrice, and I'm sorry to say it, but it's the truth. It will never happen because we don't love ourselves as an African people or people of color to close down the necessary rights, get ourselves together, deal with our issues, and then go and try to form some sort of partnership with those that oppress us. We rather join partnership with them first.
I appreciate your point of view, but you know that life isn't sequential, and reality doesn't work that way. I mean, it's quite sporadic. And in especially in politics, you have to do manage a whole bunch of things all at the same time. This the point that you're raising is seminal to the point about coalition building. People have made the argument for many, many years that given the apartheid nature of the society in which we live, we can't help but first start from home base and secure our home base. But look, here's the problem. The problem is that is a long, drawn-out effort, and it will take several generations to get done, if at all it gets done. You're living in a situation where you have to be dynamic for practical reasons. You know, I must note that a lot of folks are into this business of idealism. And you have to be idealistic to some degree, but you have to be realistic first. Really understand your reality. If your reality, as you have pointed out, is that there is this deep line of racial demarcation that isn't easy to bridge, but you're proposing that people tend to that, give a lot of energy to that as part of the basis for further movement. I'm asking you, I'm telling you, as a matter of fact, you don't have that much time. So what is the other way to go around it where you achieve a particular goal that is not necessarily ideal in terms of what it is you feel you need to accomplish, but at least pragmatic? In the situation now, it doesn't matter what Bernie did or didn't do. It's completely irrelevant. You see, this is my point. It has happened. We did nothing as it had happened. We did nothing. All of the 2020 hindsight does not help us now. The time to exercise all this great vision was when it was happening, and even before it happened, because, as I maintain, these things didn't just come out of the blue. There's a historical context for this. He was following, and the process was following the playbook, which was already established. He is the fourth such candidate to capitulate to the Democratic Party after getting a groundswell of support from across the board. But people let it happen. And now the experts said, what happened? It doesn't matter. That's my position. It doesn't matter what he did or didn't do. What is more important is to examine what we didn't do, how we permitted this, and what can be done to prevent it from happening ever again. That is a political lesson right there. It is not enough to tell us or to feel a sense of contentment that you have correctly analyzed the situation after it's happened. It's like, you know, using a parachute that opens on impact. You don't want that kind of parachute. You want to be able to take heed of the lessons learned apply them and see where we go from here. But we get stymied and we get stuck with, as Leonard Jeffries would say, the paralysis of analysis. But we don't have any plan. What is the plan? We don't know. There's where we have to engage. What is the plan forward? Thanks for getting us started today, Jay. Great ideas. And I'm sure someone will pick it up and react. This is the whole point of this open forum, to be brave enough to share your intimate thoughts and people understanding that these are, in fact, your thoughts, and they need to be respected as such, whether they agree or disagree. 888-874-4888. We try to get a sense here, or to encourage the activism that's been missing in a way, which is thinking, political thinking, political science. That's why it's called political science. We have to understand systems. And therefore, we are shaped by our understanding of these systems, hopefully, in articulating a path forward. But we get stuck all the time. And this couldn't be a worse time to get stuck. But we are. We have to do something about our own individual political consciousness, because this is the problems we are experiencing are the end result of all these individual consciousness getting stuck. And, you know, I'm not so worried about the majority parties. They already have perfected the science of how they wish to operate. They got it. I'm wondering when we will come up with a workable alternative, a pragmatic approach. What is the problem? Why aren't we assessing as we go the mistakes we are making? And why aren't we seeing that we're repeating really serious mistakes, and we should be correcting them by now? We should be much farther ahead. Maybe I'm being unrealistic and way too demanding here. Maybe I have no appreciation of the hard work and whatnot. But all I keep saying is I look at time, the time that has gone by. It's irretrievable. And we are not moving. We are not moving the way we ought to be moving. And we are not accomplishing some of the goals that we should be accomplishing. And it's because we appear not to have a science. We appear not to have our version, not theirs. We're playing by their rules, which is why we're getting the results that we're getting. And there's a reluctance to examine for you know, the problems that we have created ourselves by not putting together a workable plan and having a leadership that is dynamic. You can't just say, well, this is what we're going to do 10 years from now. You don't know what's going to happen 10 years from now. And it's good to plan for 10 years from now. But in the meantime, what is the dynamic approach right now? What is the dynamic approach to the situation we're in right now? What is the leadership saying? How could we, you know, fashion a very fast response that is also effective? What is our plan B and plan C? We're stuck. We have to admit it. 888-874-4888. Harvey from Berkeley, you're on the air.
Hello, more than wonderful, you trees.
How are you? Hey, wonderful Harvey. What's going on in your neck of the woods?
Well, as far as creating a better world, I would just want to say that now's a great time to divest away from fossil fuel companies that produce short-term profits but lead to long-term losses. And 350.org's Bill McKibben said, if it's wrong to wreck the climate, then it's wrong to profit from the wreckage. And the good news is that the Rockefeller Brothers Fund, the University of California, and the World Council of Churches are among the hundreds of faith-based groups, pension funds, colleges, and nonprofits that have pledged to divest from their fossil fuel holdings. And it turns out that a well-constructed fossil-free portfolio can match and even outperform coal, oil, natural gas, and nuclear stocks and bonds. And here are some of the reasons to divest from these climate destabilization industries. Multi-year and out-of-control forest fires and droughts like here we've been experiencing in California, severe and devastating floods along the eastern seaboard and many parts of the country, like the flash floods that are occurring in Baltimore, Maryland, larger and more frequent hurricanes and tornadoes wrecking everything in their path, causing loss of life and billions of dollars in damages. We know that fracking for oil and methane, which has caused numerous earthquakes as well as poisoning America's groundwater and freshwater supply, and the rapid melting of our polar caps that reduces the weight on both the top and bottom of our world, increasing the movement of the Earth's tectonic plates that can trigger the big one here in California, a megathrust Fukushima-like earthquake, as well as stronger and more frequent worldwide volcanoes. Plus, the burning of fossil fuels is overloading our atmosphere with greenhouse gases like carbon dioxide, causing the over-acidification of our oceans, as well as a dramatic heating up of our planet's atmosphere. 2015 was the hottest year on record, which causes the expansion of the ocean's water, along with the melting of polar caps, making coastal cities more vulnerable to sea rise, which will lead to inland migration by millions of climate refugees. So the fossil fuel industry has always privatized the profits and socialized the losses, which ends up costing American taxpayers and insurance companies trillions of dollars in lost revenue. So it's time for us to take a personal stand and divest our investment portfolios away from fossil fuels toward a clean, renewable energy future, because where's the profit in a burnt-out planet?
Well, I was going to be asking, where are our investment portfolios? We don't have too many of those. But thanks so much. You always get us thinking about the environment. Thank you very much, Harvey, for your call today.
Thank you.
All right. So we are still looking for answers and or ideas, which might be the same thing. We are smack in the middle of a dilemma. And we don't seem to have answers. We are smack in the middle of a political dilemma. We are smack in the middle of a very daunting reality. What's the way out? What do we do? And not in this, as I said, not in the idealistic, unreachable way. What is the pragmatic approach we should be taking right now? Because it's coming. It's coming. And we will have no option but to react. But what are we reacting with? What is informing our actions and our thinking at this time? We have to take a very hard look at what the third parties have not done. And the reason I'm being very hard about it is that if third parties are going to be very, very important to all of us, we cannot accept underperformance. We can't. And we can't let them slide. I mean, just take a look at this. the Libertarian Party has been around for a long time. Why is it only registering in the low digits consistently? And why is it expected to do just that? Why is that acceptable? The Green Party has participated now in several presidential campaigns. Why is the needle not moving? Why are we still in the single digit in terms of support, political support? And why do we think it's okay? Who is, you know, you have to have some kind of indicator that you take this thing so seriously. I'm not suggesting that, you know, this is a lark, but I'm saying that we have to put pressure on these viable alternatives, and they're viable. But they clearly are underperforming and making really bad mistakes. The failure to put Sanders in check is one of them. And to go back and recollect 13 million votes. I mean, you can't, I can't understand how people are not aghast at this, that they just let it happen. In a race where even one quarter of those votes could torpedo Hillary Clinton's candidacy. What is the dynamic now in terms of leadership? Why don't these people see the need to put their heads together and say, look, we are running up against the system and we have our different ways of approaching political progress. We have our different ideas, but we are solidly united against this outrageous thing that they call an election here. We are together on that. And we are urging that no matter what you do on election day, the number one thing you should do, pick any one of us, pick any of the parties that are here today at this news conference. Support whichever party you like, but make sure you don't support the Republicans and the Democrats, because doom is certain. Now, that's insightful leadership. Go back and get your 13 million votes and trounce Clinton with it. You have to at least demonstrate that the votes are valuable enough to protect, that you have enough integrity to say, well, in as much as we generated these millions of votes, we got to stand up and protect them. They are not the personal property of Bernie Sanders, but they let this thing happen. It boggles the mind. And here is a blatant example of how the left or the third party world is stymied, because they have not invented alternative systems. They're still working with the, you know, the logbook from the Democratic and Republican parties. They're still following that book. And we cannot tolerate it any longer. We have to insist that the third parties get a grip. If you don't think that you could be successful, then fold up your tent and go away. But the repeated losses as a result of not having your act together, you're not moving, you're not growing. And every election cycle that you repeat this means that you are providing, you are administering an anesthetic to the very people that you want support from. They get turned off. So we have to demand that they do something internally, do an internal audit, find out what it is they're doing wrong, because they obviously are doing something wrong. And people want to support them. This is the tragedy of it all. You're at a time where you're such a logical choice. People want to support you. They want to put their 2 cents in your pot. But they don't feel confident that you know what you're doing, because they see these kinds of things and they say, well, what are these people thinking? I don't care about the Republican Party, the Democratic Party. They're doing their thing, and they are doing it successfully. But that's not where my political interests lie. The people, the other alternative systems are underperforming. And that's the alarm I'm raising. And there's no reason that they should be. Here is a time when the third parties should be humming. Collectively, they would be able in this election to give a proper drubbing to the system. But they have been, again, repeating the same things that didn't work so many years ago. And in the meantime, if in the case of the Libertarian Party, you're talking almost 50 years have passed, and we're getting nowhere. And we're doing the same thing. It's time to make a decision whether you're committed to something and invest in studying and making a system that is truly workable and can truly galvanize support across the board to the system. We need it. This is my frustration. We need these parties. Anyway, that's me talking. Randolph from Montreal, you're on the air.
Hello, Lutrice.
Hi.
I'd like to say that I was amazed yesterday to read that the independent parties have something like 31% of the popular vote. What I imagine is that people can protect their vote, not listen to what others are saying, that there's no possibility. If they can protect their vote and make sure it's counted through actually participating in the electoral process, then these 31% could come to realization that they then, if it's possible that even 20 or 25 or this will give courage to people who are sort of standing back. So if they could support it, if they can support these parties financially, if they can take the reins of this electoral process in their hands and make sure that those people who want to vote for the third parties can actually realize it, then the whole world changes. Unfortunately, McCarthy had a good expression when asked why this Liberal Party is not successful, and he said, well, unfortunately, we're very slow starters. So I think there's a good hope. If this is true, if this poll is correct, people are truly changing their point of view. And I respect your station and people who are helping this third parties to succeed, because it'll be a far better world. over to
I have no disagreement with anything you've just said. This is my point of frustration. Everything right now is coming together to make that very case, the very case that you're making. Everything, all of the elements are there, but it's just not working. And my belief is not that the people don't want to support the parties, but it is that the parties have not retooled. They have not understood the science of running in this climate, so that they make it clear. You know, we hear all the time on the program, the Green Party, for example, they're not in the neighborhood. We never see them. We don't even know what they're about. I mean, if you're running for the fifth time for the presidential spot, it stands to reason, in my view, that you have had at least four terms, that's 16 years, to get a handle on what it is you need to do to galvanize support. But your point is also well taken, that people want things to happen, but don't want to make things happen, the issue of support. They look to the party, the party's supposed to do everything. Not understanding, and this is part of education, you're climbing Mount Everest backwards in heels. All right? This is a very tough thing to do for a party that's new on the block. So part of what the educational process should be is let people know exactly what you're up against and make fundraising a vigorous part of your operation. Don't wait until, you know, election year to realize that you need to raise funds.
That's true.
You know, you have the races run every 4 years. You have to have a campaign, an ongoing campaign that puts money in that reservoir, that war chest, so that you have some money on hand. It's all about organization.
But it's true. A good military man would understand how that kind of situation works, because they have a point of view of everything that is connected, so that if they have somebody who is capable in a military type way, they could bring forward. I agree. You're quite right.
You have to have an operation. You have to have it planned out, especially because you know you're coming up as on the rough side of the mountain, and you therefore can't leave anything to chance. And this was a fantastic, this would have been a fantastic year.
Exactly.
To unleash all of that knowledge that you have gathered, that could now serve to catapult you into orbit as a bona fide, not that they're not bona fide now, but I mean in the sense of being a contender. You're somebody who can't easily be dismissed. This is what we have to do. We have to call them to account on this.
Right, right. But at the moment, right now, it is absolutely essential that people get courage and not listen that these people don't have a chance. Forget that.
Well, again, as I pointed out, this calls for really insightful leadership. Does it hurt them to just come together? It's not going to take votes from one another. Come together as third parties and absolutely denounce the system and say, you can vote for any one of us, and we urge you to examine where we stand on issues, but we want you to know that we are of one mind. This system has got to go.
Bravo. Bravo.
That's insightful leadership. You come together even just to make a statement. And then you tell people, you know, well, I'm this party and that party and the next party. Pick whichever, because we know the truth. None of the parties is situated right now to win a majority vote. None of the third parties will do that this cycle. Mm-hmm. But you can begin to have incredible impact. You still have power to persuade people. And the one thing you want to persuade them is the system is not working. They have caused the problems. We are healthy alternatives, but we are of one mind. This duopoly has got to go.
Right. Right. Well, I think that even in the duopoly, there are decent people, that there are somehow they have such a vested interest in keeping it going. But, you know, they must be people, even in these groups, that if something can turn them to the third parties, I think the two parties are afraid. They're absolutely afraid of the third party. Because
they're terrified of them. This is my point. The yeah. parties are acting like they don't understand the power they actually have right now. They can determine the outcome of this race easily.
Exactly.
And but they have to act like they understand this. And they're not acting like they understand this.
You don't
walk away from your 13 million votes. You just don't.
Right. I agree. And they people have to just get a bit of courage. And I know in the past there's been such disaster against people, the people, the black people. Poor Martin Luther King trying just to go to help the garbage people. I mean, what is wrong with? And then they had such power arranged against them. What? So I understand, but it's got to take courage. People have to get. You know, there's more. This is the most important thing in their lives. For the love of God, they can make a difference for themselves and their children just by doing this. Just by tackling. I'm sorry. I gotta go.
All right. Thank you so much. Thank you, Randolph, from Montreal. T from New York, you're on the air.
Hi.
You're on the air.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was, you know, the thing is, when people vote, to be able to make sure that your vote is counted for the person that you wanted to vote for, we're going to have to make receipts ourselves. And we need to have people that are in place in every polling vote, every polling station to, you know, document, you know, I don't know how people are going to respond to, you know, just coming out saying, look, this is who I voted for, and I'm putting it on the record that this is who I voted for. So if when the deal goes down, when they flip the votes like they did for George Bush, this won't be able to go over. And the way that they did Bernie, I mean, I don't know. It seemed like he was complicit with just letting them take his votes. Because
Bernie was a volunteer. Bernie volunteered 13 million votes. It was his decision. And apparently done outside of the knowledge of the movement. And because the movement did not fire him, which is what I said they should do, immediately fire him, make it plain that they sever ties with him. In fact, he severed ties with them. But the movement continues. The leadership just collapsed.
Yeah, the movement does continue. And the thing that we can do, other than, you know, making sure you document your vote and have, you know, everybody, it's each one to teach one. And it should be somebody in every state, even if you have to write in the Green Party, just vote for them. Because you do have a choice. You don't have to vote for, you know, Dumber Dumber. You don't have to do that. You have to show that yourself esteem says, I'm not going to be a slave to the Democrats, and I'm not going to be a slave to the Republicans. I can vote for something else. But even on top of that, wherever you are, whatever state you're in, start running for for the common seats, do the governor, do the common council, the city council. People have to start putting themselves in these positions, because this is like the guy was saying about the military. This is well thought out, and it's pushing the people farther and farther away from being anywhere participating in anything that has to do with this country and being governed. So you won't. It's no one up there that's representing you, and they're not going to represent you, because no one is the people are not just galvanizing together and saying, look, we can do this by just doing the grassroots things first, doing it now, and building on that, and you get it going. But you still have to make sure your vote, if you're going to vote, make it count. And you don't. You don't have to vote, be a slave to the Democrats and Republicans, which is, to me, the same party. And Washington, I mean, if you know the history, the founding fathers said there shouldn't be any parties. They're not even supposed to be parties. So they're breaking, their so-called patriotism to the founding fathers. There was no such thing as no parties. They never wanted that. But you see what you have now is the whole bought system. These people that have no spirit, no soul, they run with, these are just evil people. I can't even call them human beings. They just have no good hearts. And I hope I hope the Clintons and the Trumps, I hope they repent, and become human beings with a good heart and start doing things. But other than that, they can't, because, Clinton has shown, her just,
I can hear it in your voice, the desperation about the system. I can hear it. And this is why we have to keep talking about these things, because hopefully it leads us in a direction of action of some sort that addresses mm-hmm. the desperation that we're feeling. And I thank you for calling in today and participating.
Thank you.
Thank you. From Florida, Ray, you're on the air.
Hi, Idris.
Hello.
Hello. I'd like to bring up something I saw yesterday that was an ABC poll, a so-called live poll. I thought they all were. And the results were so upsetting that they apparently scrubbed it right off the Internet right away. Hillary came in fourth. Trump got 70% of the poll. Stein and Johnson each got 11%. And Hillary got 8%, and the sample size was 145,000 people. And when the blogger that discovered the poll went back to try and view it again, it wasn't even a 404 not found. It was just a complete white screen, so it had been taken off. So, time will tell, but we could be looking at some huge upsets. There's a lot of talk going around about how the cameras are manipulated at Hillary rallies to make it seem like a big crowd, when in fact it's just a few
hundred. Oh, yes. I remembered one, she had a session at a black church, and they literally had to reorganize the room to make it look like it was full of people. It wasn't.
I think I saw that picture, yeah. Yep, and yesterday, I have to admit, I occasionally listen to National Public Radio when I'm making dinner. Just to keep track of the enemy, And they mentioned an interesting thing yesterday, that 30% of the Colorado delegation, after Bernie declared for Hillary, said that they were going to support the Green Party. So, there is news out there. There are some reasons to hope for a better outcome than the one we're being fed every day.
I'm with you. I'm hoping, I'm being critical, but I'm not being pessimistic. I am still hopeful that these systems could get their acts together, because we need them.
Yep.
That's the point. There's no vested interest in destroying any of these parties, because they provide some kind of an alternative, a workable alternative, to this two-party system. I'm for that, and I'm hoping that we don't go beyond this point without having those parties really get their acts together. Everything is indicating that they don't have it together. And at a time when people are desperate for something else, you know, they are amenable to listening. They are open to new ideas, but they're not being reached.
Someone made a comment. I sent you a thing last Sunday night. I don't know if you listened to it. It was a YouTube interview. But this former CIA agent said that the key to the Libertarian Party getting some power is to stop nominating dopers. I think that's the impression that everybody has of Gary Johnson, is that he's smoked a few too many.
You know, it's just that party has got its work to do. I mean, the performance of the candidates, just pitiful.
Yeah.
If anything, they've done a great job of driving people away from the party, saying, oh, my God, this is what we got to work with. And I don't believe that, you know, Gary Johnson is you know, stupid or anything like that. I think he just doesn't understand how this thing works. And there's nobody there to say, listen, you know, part of it, too. And, you know, people may poo-poo this stuff. But the two parties, what they do is they sink a lot of money into preparing their candidates to present themselves and the party's positions and ideas to the public. I don't think the Libertarian Party did much investing this time around.
No, it's not a unified front at all.
No.
Unless we
have to figure a way, Ray, how to get these parties, especially the Green Party and other parties, to get them to understand that they are doing themselves a disservice when they appear so scattered and they appear so unprepared and they appear to be not understanding the value of time. Here we are in the best time, I mean it in the sense that it is fraught with all kinds of anxiety and whatnot. This is the time to shine. This is a time when you should be ready with answers, and you have troops, and you don't have to wait until year four to figure out what the climate is going to be. You should have seen this coming. And you should be prepared. People will listen. They would want to hear what you have to say. They would appreciate the effort of coming into their communities and talking and spreading the word. But there seems to be some other method that they're following, but it's yielding horrific results.
Well, when you have a volunteer staff, you often get what you pay for. And I look at the Green Party website often, and in early October, I kept thinking, when are the bumper stickers and T-shirts going to show up? You know, because at least that plants an image in the mind of other people. People noticed it. And in early October, they had the T-shirts and bumper stickers, and then there was a note that said it's going to take 3 to 4 weeks to get your delivery. And I thought, well, what's 3 and 4 weeks from the beginning of October? You know, the game's over by then.
Game is over.
So, that's an example of really not thinking it out too well, and maybe not putting, you know, paid people in charge of important functions.
Well, I'm hoping that in the few days that are left before the election, that we can see some indication that somebody internally is making a very strong effort to make a last ditch appeal and to situate the party far more positively in the minds of voters. I'm hoping that would happen. And for all of the parties, all of the third parties, I think there's a range of thought that needs to be appreciated, that they go back to the drawing board and get this thing inspected in its minutest detail to find out what it is they were doing right, what they failed miserably at doing, and the relationship of these two things to the outcome. We cannot afford another cycle of the duopoly. We can't. And no. we are not seeing that the third parties have stepped up to the plate here and taken on this task as a major, major, major effort, as if our lives truly do depend on it, because they do. Thanks so much. Good to hear from you,
sure,
Ray.
Thank you for
calling in. Stay tuned. Alternative Visions with Dr. Jack Rasmus is next. You can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. It is Friday, after all, the beginning of a weekend. You will want to take some time to spend with positive people who bring positive dimension to your life. We'll meet each other again on Monday. Until then, a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. Bye-bye.